Welcome to Brew in One Ear and Out the Other. I'm your host, Pranav.
And I'm your host, Nakin.
Our guest on today's podcast is Brandon Schneider, Chief Revenue Officer at Golden State Warriors and minority owner of the LAFC.
We had an opportunity to talk with Brandon on September 19th about his earliest memories of UCLA, his love of the Golden State Warriors, the opening of the Chase Center in San Francisco, the current landscape in the MLS, and the world of esports. So Pranav, what was your favorite part about talking with Brandon?
My favorite part was when Brandon and I are talking about our love for the Golden State Warriors. At the same time, we're roasting you about your fan allegiance to the Sacramento Kings and how you're a bandwagon fan. Nakin, what did you enjoy most about talking with Brandon?
So what I didn't enjoy was being called a bandwagon fan. And let the record reflect, I dispute those charges. But what I did enjoy was learning a little bit more about the MLS and the recent success that LAFC has had this past year. So without further ado, here's our interview with Brandon.
Hi, Brandon. Thanks for joining us on Brew in One Ear and Out the Other. Because this is a UCLA-themed podcast, one of the things we wanted to do was ask one of the questions that current applicants have to answer as part of the UC application. We think it will serve as a great introduction to our listeners. So there's six prompts. The prompt that I picked was, think about an academic subject that inspires you. Describe how you have furthered this interest inside and or outside the classroom. And it could be something from UCLA, a class that you took, you feel like you've carried with you.
Well, first of all, Pranav, thanks for having me on. Excited to be on here with the UCLA community. So a class, when we started talking about a class, the first thing I thought of is math. I always love math. So specific, I'll give you a story from my UCLA days. I thought about being a math major, and I was in calculus, Math 32. I took Math 32A and then Math 32B. I don't remember the professor's name, but he wore the same exact outfit to every single lecture. We got like halfway through the quarter, and I started everyone sort of was talking about it and noticed it. Black jeans, black shirt with this black sweater around his waist. And then we'd do stuff in lecture, and then the test would have nothing to do with anything that we talked about in lecture. So anyway, that's how I decided not to be a math major. But math has always been my favorite subject. I ended up being business economics with an accounting minor at UCLA, but, you know, incorporates a lot of math and with what I do now with the Warriors, being good with numbers and being able to kind of manipulate numbers and be quick, certainly helps with everything that I do.
That's awesome. In our last conversation, you mentioned that both your parents were UCLA alum. How did it feel kind of growing up under the UCLA influence really early on?
Yeah, so both my parents went to UCLA. I thought you were going to ask me when they graduated. I think the answer to that's 1976, if my memory serves me correctly. But I grew up a huge sports fan, and so that's really where it manifested itself. So growing up in the Bay Area, I was a fan of the San Francisco Giants, 49ers, Golden State Warriors, and UCLA. Those were my teams. So I started watching UCLA football and basketball games mainly in the late 80s. So it was Don McLean, it was Tracy Murray, Gerald Matkins, Mitchell Butler. I'm probably all before your time, but those are the guys that I grew up watching. And then I actually, a little later, fast forward 1995, I was at the national championship or the Final Four, Seattle Kingdom. UCLA beat big, and this is all off memory, so you can look me up. Big Country Reeves, Oklahoma State in the national semifinals. By the way, we were 31-2 that year. Number one overall seed going into the tournament. We lost, our two losses were Oregon and Cal. And I was at the Final Four with my dad and my brother sitting in the North Carolina section. That's just where we got our tickets. And beat Oklahoma State. I think the score was 74-61. And then in the championship game, and by the way, I'm still in high school, so. Well, that was the influence totally from my parents. I didn't even know I was going to UCLA yet. Mm-hmm. I was 15 years old back then. And then in the championship game, we beat the defending national championship Arkansas Razorbacks. And if you remember that game, Tyus Edney was hurt his wrist. They blitzed us. I think we were down like 8-2, and we had to pull Edney because he couldn't do it. And that was the 40 minutes of hell. Like, they're pressing. So we only played 6 guys the rest of the game. Cameron Dollar, Toby Bailey, freshman, Charles and Ed O'Bannon, George Zedek with J.R. Henderson, also a freshman off the bench. And obviously, you know, the rest is history. But so that was really the influence. I grew up loving UCLA sports, and I'll never forget, you know, that memory of being at the Final Four in person in back in 95.
Yeah, and did he Reese growing up early, 4 years old?
No, you know, it's funny. I don't know if it was even there. I might be too old. I don't know. I don't know when Diddy Reese opened. Lots of Diddy Reese stories and memories, Buck 50s, all that stuff when I was in college, I never knew Diddy Reese until I got to UCLA.
Okay. So you're in high school, you're going to these UCLA basketball games, probably 2 years into high school, you're applying to colleges. What was your thought when you were applying? Was UCLA number one on your list? Kind of, were you kind of avoiding it because your parents went there? That's what my brother did. He was like, that's out.
Yeah. I got to decide how honestly I want to answer this, knowing the audience. So I only applied to 5 schools. Uh-huh. And if I'm being totally honest, my first choice was to go to Stanford. What's that?
Local, right? You're at home, you got the Giants, you got the Niners.
Yeah, local. And, you know, Stanford's a great school. But I always knew – so my college counselor was like, you should apply to Duke because it's kind of a similar sort of a feel as Stanford. Vanderbilt was suggested to me. So I applied to Stanford, Duke, Vanderbilt, UCLA, UC San Diego, and that was it. But I knew in my mind and in my heart that if I didn't get into Stanford, that UCLA is where I wanted to go. And there was some thought. I mean, I think I probably would have gone to Stanford if I gotten in, but I think I would have had a decision. I think I would have had to decide between UCLA and Stanford. But I always knew that I would love going to UCLA.
So now you're at UCLA. How was that experience for you? Did you start going to UCLA basketball games?
So I loved it. I mean, I tell people all the time, like, in my opinion, if you don't like, I can't imagine how anyone wouldn't like UCLA because there's something for everybody, right? Great location, college town, downtown Westwood, but like you could be like a nerd and just like study all the time and like, you know, be super into school. You can play sports, intramural, whatever that is. You can go to parties all the time and like not pay that much attention to school. Anything you want to do, drama, arts, like UCLA, in my opinion, has everything. It's like its own little city, but except it's just with people that are all kind of the same age, same interests. I totally loved UCLA. As far as going to sporting events, I went to a lot of basketball games at Poly, as much as I could, walk from the dorms. I lived in Reber Hall my first year, and then I lived at 403 Landfair my next 2 years. And then my last year I lived on the corner of Kelton and Levering. So I was in Westwood all 4 years. Okay. So I went to a lot of games. Football is a different story. So I grew up, I love all sports. Yeah. I grew up watching, like learning to watch football on TV, because back in those days, like, well, even now, if you go to a football game, you kind of miss all the other games that day. And I'm talking NFL and college. So I grew up and football, I just feel like it's better, easier to see on TV. But so what exacerbated that is I went to one UCLA football game, and it was just an ordeal getting into my seats. By the way, it was a great game. This was, I don't remember what year it was, probably 1999 or 2000. And we were undefeated, and Oregon was undefeated. We had Cade McDown. Their quarterback was Akili Smith. I think we were like number 5 in the country. They were like number 8, and we beat them. You'll look all this up. I think we beat them 41-38 in overtime. So it was an amazing game, but it was just the logistics of getting there. I'm impatient. So I after that, I decided to watch football games on TV. But, I watch every game and went to the basketball games.
UCLA number 5 football, it's a far cry from where the football program is right now.
Don't remind me. If you remember those days, and again, I'm doing all this off memory. I didn't look any of this up. I probably should have, but we had 2 straight years. So we had 1 year where we lost our first 2 games and then won the rest of our games. Okay. And then the following year we started undefeated, and it was like, it was us, Kansas State, and a couple of other teams kind of vying for that national championship opportunity. And then that was the year there was a hurricane. It was something where we were supposed to play Miami early in the season. Okay. and it got canceled. And so we played them at the end. We were undefeated. It was our last game, and Edrin James went crazy on us, and they beat us 45-42, which screwed us. And then we ended up losing our bowl game. But had we not lost that game, we would have had a shot at a national championship. Anyway, it was two straight years where the first year we lost our first two, and the next year we lost our last two. We won every game in between. I mean, that was like one of the best kind of football eras we've had in a long time.
Oh, wow. So at UCLA, you're an econ major. You're going to a lot of sporting events. When you graduate, what was your reasoning behind going with the Warriors for your first career job?
They were the only ones that would give me a job.
So this was back in 2000. Was there a recession, I think, back that year?
Yeah, you see, I stopped for my pause for you to laugh, and then you jumped in on me. I by the way, I'm only half kidding. So yeah. I graduated in 2001. I was 21 years old. I actually did something that I would not recommend anyone else do, which is I didn't take advantage of all the opportunities that UCLA afforded as far as job fairs and career help.
Okay.
Only because I knew once I got in a career, I'd end up working a lot. And I just didn't want to start that right out of school at 21 years old. So I worked in a restaurant called Il Fornaio that I worked at through high school. There's one in Beverly Hills, there's one in Santa Monica. I worked a little bit at Il Fornaio actually when I was in college too. So I moved back home to the Bay Area, knew I was going to work in a restaurant for a while. And then I started looking for real jobs, I don't know, 6 months or a year. When I said real jobs, like career kind of thing, 6 months or a year later. But yeah, you said it, the stock market crashed. So, you know, I had interviews with Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley. I had great connections, and they're like, you know, we'd love to hire you, but we're firing people. And then I was at a Giants game with, so I have three little brothers. My youngest brother, this is like a roundabout thing. I should probably just say family friend, but my youngest brother played soccer with a kid.
Okay.
Whose dad was the general manager at Fox Sports Net at the time, which was the Warriors, RSN, and the San Francisco Giants. So I was in his suite at a Giants game, and he knew I was looking for jobs. And he, you know, I'd gotten to know him, and he's like, I can put in a word for you with the Giants or the Warriors if you want. And I was like, are you kidding me? Yeah. And so I did whatever he told me to do. I think he told me to write a note. Back in those days, email was just coming into existence. I think I wrote a letter to the Niners or to the Giants. And then he had me call somebody at the Warriors, never heard back from either one for a period of time. And of course, being the smart person I was, I didn't follow up. All the things that I recommend the opposite now when people ask me for career advice. But the Warriors called me delayed, you know, a couple months later. It was the EA for the president. Her name was Diane McCausland. She calls me and she goes, hey, Robert Rao would like to meet with you. Robert Rao was the president of the Warriors. So I was 22 years old. I put on one of my dad's suits. Went in, all I knew is I was interviewing with the president of the Warriors, didn't know what I was interviewing for. By the way, I did zero due diligence, knew nothing about him. So I walk in the room and I couldn't believe how young he was. It turns out, I think he was like 36 or 37 years old at the time. He was the president of the Warriors. But anyway, we start talking and we had a great conversation. You know, we're talking about the team, we're rapping, and he asked me if I could sell. And I was like, yeah, sure, why not, right? And so he introduced me to the ticket people. Long story short, by the end of that visit, he offered me a job. Very sexy entry-level job of selling tickets for the Golden State Warriors. So that's how it all started.
Wow, so you're now with the Warriors, entry-level selling tickets. It seems like you've been there for 17 years now. Most millennials move job every 2 years or so. What kind of motivated you? How did you kind of move up the career ranks with the Warriors?
Well, first, I'm not a millennial, so that's why I'm not jumping around. But you know, I'm half joking. Actually, I'm serious. But it's funny because I, you know, when you tell people you've been here 17 years, I mean, I get virtually the same reaction every time. People are shocked because it doesn't happen nowadays in general, and especially in sports. Typically, the way sports ends up working is people, because there's only so many teams, right? And certainly in each market, there's really only so many teams. So people end up moving around to different cities, different organizations to be able to grow their career. That's just typically how it works. So I've been really fortunate. You asked me how, you know, there's no one way. I mean, you get lucky along the way. I mean, I joke with people that, you know, you stay long enough, they got to promote you after a while. But for me, you know, it was, look, when I started my job, they weren't looking for anyone. And I got my foot in the door because of the connection that I had, which is kind of the way the world works. But at the time, I kind of had a little bit of a chip on my shoulder because I knew when I came in, I was one of like six or seven people selling tickets. And all I was doing was taking the pizza pie and cutting it one more way, right? There's X number of sales that are gonna be made. These guys, we're working on commission, and now I'm coming in there and taking money from everyone else. Plus, you know, they probably were gonna hear how I got the job, and would people feel like I hadn't earned it? And at the end of the day, maybe I wanted to prove to myself that I deserved it, right? Because I always, you know, I grew up and my dad was an entrepreneur and was successful, and you know, I think probably wanted me to go work for him, and I never wanted to do that. I'm close with my dad, always will be, but I wanted to kind of do it for myself. And so I think because of that, I came in with this chip on my shoulder that like, I'm going to sell more than everybody else. And I think that's endured. I mean, I always wanted to outwork everybody, and it sounds easy or cliched. You know, when we interview people, and years ago, I used to interview for a lot of, you know, entry-level ticket positions when I was kind of a manager or director in that area, and everybody tells you how hard they're going to work. And what I learned over time is they're either lying or they don't know what hard work is. So that was one piece of it. And then I think, you know, being a team player, you know, everybody wants to make more money and grow their career, but how do you go about doing that? And if it's just always about me, it's not about Pranav or Brandon, it's about the Golden State Warriors, right? About UCLA. And so taking that mindset of being a team player, and it, you know, it sounds utopian, but you know, doing what's right for the organization, if you do things the right way, it does tend to work out. And then the other advice that I give people, and hopefully what I've done, and I think what's helped me, is you almost do the next job before you get it. And not in an overzealous way, but like, you know, it's pretty rare someone's going to come and go, you know what, Brandon, you're doing a great job. We're going to give you a promotion. I suppose that could happen, and it does happen on occasion, but I think what happens more likely is like I'm doing ticket sales, but I'm sitting in leadership type meetings, and other subjects come up, and you're engaged, and you're helping, you're doing more than what's asked of you, and just finding ways to add more value. Because again, it's not about me, it's about the organization. So if everything I do turns to gold, and everything I do like is positive, the organization would be crazy not to give me more responsibility. So that's what I've tried to do, and not even in a purposeful way, by the way. Like, I just do it because, look, I want to do everything I can to help the Warriors succeed, but I think that's what ends up happening. And so, you know, again, I look at it the other way, because I get a lot of questions from people on my team, and just from people that reach out through LinkedIn and other channels that want to talk about, you know, how you get into sports and how you advance within sports. And that's the advice I always give.
That's awesome. I think one thing that I took away from that is a lot of people, and UCLA Anderson has even told us this, is on their resume, they write kind of the responsibilities for their current job. But when you're applying to another job, it's like, it's great, but you're just saying you're a perfect fit for the job that you're doing already right now. Maybe it's, you got to show that those skills translate to the job you're applying to. And I think that talks to you saying, hey, take on certain responsibilities that you can to move up the ladder.
I think it's well said.
Also, one of the things you talked about was hard work. I think for a lot of our listeners who are probably applying to a job, you mentioned when you interviewed a lot of applicants, one of the things that stood out was when they said, hey, I work hard. It's either hard to gauge whether they're telling the truth or whether they understand what's hard work. How do they showcase something like that in an interview that they really are who they say they are when they say I'm a hard worker?
Yeah, I mean, part of it's on the interviewer, right? To kind of dig into that and understand, you know, give me some examples of jobs you've had or situations you've been in where, you know, where you did whatever it takes to get the job done and really had to go above and beyond, right? So understanding how to get that out of people. But I think it's connecting with people. I mean, you know, a lot of times it's more who you know than what you know. So networking is super important. So getting having that, you know, that connection to kind of get your foot in the door is important as much as possible. But when you're talking to someone, it's just having that genuine conversation where you're purposeful and convincing in how you talk about things, and people can hear it. They can see it in your eyes, and they can tell the passion. And as you're talking through the things that you've done and how you've done it and why you're the right fit for the job, I think that comes through, right? You gotta be authentic. And look, you know, it's funny, like when I say ticket sales, like nobody grows up saying, hey, I want to be in sales when I grow up. But we're all in sales. Like when I'm interviewing for a job, I'm selling myself. When I'm at the bar meeting a girl or a guy or whatever, I'm selling myself. When I'm a CEO of a company trying to get funding or trying to, you know, get another partner, whatever it is, I'm selling myself. Right. So life really is about sales. So it's funny to say it that way, but a lot of things you do in life, incorporate selling, whether that's, you know, what you've
had to sell the podcast.
That's exactly right. You had to get a hold of me and convince me why I should spend an hour talking to you, although it wasn't that hard when it had Bruins and UCLA involved.
Yeah, it was an intro call. I had to act a little bit interested in your son was going to preschool, a couple other things, but that's interesting. I find that interesting.
I thought you actually were interested.
I was. So one of the things you mentioned was kind of who you know, and UCLA has a large influence on the Warriors, I would say, right now. You got you on the front office side. You got Steve Kerr, whose dad was a professor at UCLA. He grew up going to games in the Wooden era. You got Bob Myers, who's the GM of the Warriors, Kayvon Looney. Has there been any UCLA influence on the Warriors, and has that culture been there the entire time you've been with the Warriors, or is that something just kind of towards the back half?
Well, it's an interesting question. So the person I talk most about UCLA, we've had some other Bruins work here, and we try and keep the Trojans out of here, by the way. I just met somebody who's like a production assistant part-time, and I was like, where did you go to school? And she said USC. And I was like, wow, how'd you get the job here? We try and keep the Trojans out of here as much as we can. So that still holds. But it's funny you ask. So Bob Myers and I talk about the UCLA connection fairly often, but so one thing to know about Bob is he uses quotes all the time.
Okay.
So he's a great speaker. And so when we'll be talking in front of a group or just in general, he always pulls out a quote. It's almost become like a running joke. And I would say about 3/4 of the time, guess who he is quoting? John Wooden. It's almost always John Wooden. Like one of the ones, and I'm probably not going to get this exactly right because I don't memorize the quotes like Bob does. I my guess is he's got them word for word. But one of the ones he uses the most that I really like is, it's amazing what you can accomplish when nobody cares who gets the credit. And that really embodies who we are as an organization, and who our basketball team is. And who Bob is. So if you look at Bob, like the leaders of our organization, so you have Joe Lacob, Peter Guber, leadership, best owners in sports, unbelievable. Mm-hmm. They set the tone. And then the next layer down is Bob Myers, Steve Kerr, and Rick Welts. And all these guys are all similar in that they're such humble people. Like these guys are the best in the world at what they do, but they want to do is deflect credit and talk about how great everybody else is. I've learned so much from them in that way. And it's funny how it works because, you know, you're Steve Kerr and you're giving the credit to the players. What ends up happening is he ends up getting the credit anyway, but you don't have to ask for it. And so these quotes, like, you know, it's Bob's quoting John Wooden, but that's shaped who he is. That's shaped who Kerr is, who all of us are. And that really carries over on the organization. Our values that we talk about, we use the acronym TEAM, and the M stands for modesty, humility, which has been important to us, like on and off the court. Like, you know, you go to 5 straight finals, first NBA team to do that in 53 years, first team in any North American professional sport to do that in 35 years. You know, like we go to league meetings and, you know, the other teams don't want to sit there and listen to us talk about how great we are, right? Oh, here, you know, we're succeeding in this area of the business. They're like, yeah, no kidding. You have one of the best teams of all time. So having that modesty, humility is important. And then you look at the basketball team. I mean, quite just to make it really simple, there's no way Kevin Durant comes here if we don't have an environment where you have team players, where Steph Curry is willing to defer and bring in another star along with Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, you know, Iguodala, all these guys. Durant's obviously since decided to leave, but, you know, 3 years here, 2 championships, 1 very close, very near championship, still a little raw from that Toronto series. But yeah, I mean, I think there is a pretty distinct UCLA flavor here with the Warriors. Not to mention, by the way, similar colors. I almost forgot that. A little different color blue, but you got the blue and gold, you know, with the Warriors and with UCLA,
which fits. Yeah, and bouncing off 2 kind of things we were talking about, Bob Myers and humility. We have Knockin, the co-host. He's on the podcast a little bit late, but he's from the hometown of Bob Myers, Danville. But he's a Kings fan. So Brandon and I, we don't have to be humble right now. We can just kind of throw in some Kings roasts at Knockin. I think he's trying to sabotage the podcast and, you know, trying to get back at the Warriors for beating them these past years. But Knockin, you can turn your mic on.
Yeah, no, it's on. Hi, Brandon. Apologies for being late.
It's all right, Knockin. I mean, it's, you know, it's indicative of where your NBA allegiances are, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I will say this, though. It has been tough being a Kings fan for the last all of my lifetime. I think we have the longest playoff drought right now out of all teams. It's more than, I think, 15 years or so, about somewhere around there. So it has been trying at times, but I'm waiting for the payoff in the not-too-distant future. So,
well, so it's funny you say that. When I started working for the Warriors, we were in the middle of an 18-year span where we made the playoffs once. So people forget. Like, people just think we've always been this good. I mean, we've been, you know, 5 straight finals, 7 straight playoff appearances. So it has been, obviously, a great run. But right before that, 18 years, one playoff appearance, which is actually really hard to do. And I was telling Pranav earlier, when I started working for the Warriors in 2002, you know who the best two teams in the NBA were? The Los Angeles Lakers and the Sacramento Kings. And I used to hate it because, you know, I was in ticket sales, right? Whenever the Kings came to town, we were sold out, so that was good, and it was half Kings fans. You had cowbells all over Oracle Arena at the time, now the Oakland Arena. So that I had those memories of the Kings. That was, you know, that was the Bibby, Doug Christie, Peja Stojakovic, Chris Webber, Lottie Divots. Yep. Great teams back then. So I still remember that. And you know, I will say, I know, you know, the Kings owner really well, Vivek Ranadive, was a minority owner of the Warriors, you know, now the main owner with the Kings. I know a lot of the people, the Kings, good people, but Vivek's a great guy. And obviously you guys had surprised people with how well the young team played last year. So it appears they're on it appears they're on the right track.
Like I said, not much revenue coming from him, probably $5 for basketball.
No, it's funny you mentioned that 2002 era, because that's, I think, really when I started watching basketball. And that's kind of why I ended up becoming a Kings fan and not a Warriors fan. It was in the Warriors were just not basketball relevant for, I don't know, the first 5-ish years I was watching basketball and was trying to get into the sport. And that's how the Kings ended up becoming my team. So
you know what they call that? Yeah, you stole it from me, Pranav. I was going to set it up a little bit. Yeah, that's called a bandwagon fan. I always talk to people. When I was a kid growing up in the Bay Area, I was in Giants country, but it was the late 80s. Giants went to the World Series in 89, but the A's were unbelievable, right? Bash Brothers. And almost all my friends were A's fans. And it used to piss me off because I'm like, you guys are just bandwagon fans. And I was going to games at Candlestick Park with, you know, 8,000 of my closest friends. So anyway, I know your type, Knockin. I got you dialed.
Although, to be fair, this was what, 2002, so we're talking what, 17 years ago. I don't want to age myself, but I was kind of a very young kid at that time, so there's got to be some leeway given. Would you prefer that I jump back on the Warriors bandwagon now that, like, they've been good?
Absolutely. Is that a trick question? All comers are welcome.
I've decided that I made that decision a while ago. I'm going to stick with the Kings for the rest of my life. So even though they've been struggling recently, or I guess most of my life since the beginning few years, I signed up, picked the team, stuck with it. So I don't want to be a bandwagon fan is what I'm walking away with.
Chase Center just opened up September 6th, and it's not just the home of the Warriors, but it's entirely owned by the Warriors. So any event that's happening is under the Warriors organization's sphere. How exciting is that, Brandon? Kind of what can we expect in terms of the amenities and stadium experience? You know, Knockin, potentially you can go to Chase Center, not for a Warriors game now.
That's right. You know, it's a good question. I don't know how long you have. We can talk about this for a while. But no, we're so excited. I mean, we've been at this for 7 years. We announced our intention to move to San Francisco in 2012. That was on a different site, moved sites in 14. But, you know, it's been a long road to get this building built and now open, as you said. I think tonight is our ninth concert that we've had since September 6th. So it's been a busy couple of weeks trying to get this building open. But we if you saw the amount of time and energy that went into this from Joe Lacob, Peter Guber on down, weekly meetings with architects, Peter's flying up from LA for 3 hours to talk with the group, looking at every detail of the building. You know, so we've spent the last 4 or 5 years, I've been to almost every, I personally have been to, I think, 22 NBA arenas in the last 4 years. As an organization, we've been to all of them, you know, multiple times, looking at like what works, what doesn't work. And we wanted to build a building that was authentic to San Francisco and authentic to the Bay Area. You wouldn't build the same arena. You're like, Knockin, to give you an example, Golden 1 Center in Sacramento is awesome. And that's that at, before Chase Center opened, that was my favorite building in the NBA. But I wouldn't build that building in San Francisco. Just I wouldn't build Chase Center in Sacramento. You know, it's got to make sense for the corporate community and the fans and just the surroundings. But your point, Pranav, on other events is key, because I know it's shocking for some people to hear, but not everybody in the Bay Area is a Warriors fan. But we have something for everybody. And by the way, it's not just Chase Center. We've got an 11-acre site. So we call our district Thrive City. And then Chase Center is a piece of that, but we've got 3.2 acres of open space, including a plaza that's about an acre the size of Rockefeller Center. We've got two office buildings. Uber's the tenant there. That's 580,000 square feet. And then we have 100,000 square feet of retail that'll mostly be restaurants. So about 25 restaurants on our site right outside of Chase Center. That's going to be a huge difference for our fans because, you know, you go to what's now Oakland Arena, was Oracle Arena. There's nothing to do before or after the game. So now our fans have things to do before, after the game. And then you get in the arena and Oracle was awesome. Like once you got in your seat, it was a great experience, but everything else about the building, it was the oldest building in the NBA. One kitchen in the entire arena, which we didn't tout back then, because I think that might've had people asking some questions about the food service. Chase Center now has 8 kitchens, unbelievable food and beverage experience. We're getting, you know, people are excited about that. So it's not just Warriors. You've got 200 events a year. Hopefully about 50 of those are Warriors games, 150 concerts, 2 Metallica shows. We've had 2 Elton John shows. Chance the Rapper just postponed his tour, but that's coming up. We got Mumford & Sons tonight, Janet Jackson on Saturday. We had Bon Iver, John Mayer. I could go on and on. So the idea is you've got something for everybody. And then the other thing that I would say too is it's, you know, we're, one of the things we're proud of in other cities, Sacramento, Milwaukee, or the last 2 NBA buildings, you get public money. So taxpayers are paying for a portion of the building. Mm-hmm. Chase Center is the first privately financed arena on privately purchased land in the modern era of professional sports. So entirely funded by our ownership group. So we're really proud of that. And now, you know, at Oracle, we were just a tenant. So you had some concerts, which we didn't have anything to do with. We managed the suites for all events, but that's it. And then the other thing that I would say, when you went to a Warriors game at Oracle and you walked in and you talked to somebody at the first parking, and then somebody at the box office, and then the ticket taker and the usher and the security, none of those people work for the Warriors. You probably thought they did. And we tried our best to create the right experience. But now at Chase Center, all those people work for us, which is a big job. We have 1,600 part-time employees working at every Warriors game. But we're really excited to be able to control that experience from soup to nuts. Because, you know, we're not – like right now we got a good team, so people want to come to games, right? And I'm oversimplifying it. But our team is probably – Joe Lacob would disagree, but our team is probably not always going to be this good. That's the part he would disagree with, because he thinks we always will be this good. And I hope he's right, by the way. But we want to make sure we're providing an unbelievable experience. The people come and the service you get is top notch. The food's great. The non-basketball entertainment, you know, the eateries, the stuff outside of the arena. So we've tried to look at every single detail, whether it's a Warriors game or not, and made it, you know, an amazing experience, amazing opportunity for our fans and for the Bay Area community at large.
Brandon, I wanted to touch up on authenticity, not only in terms of architecture. You mentioned a stadium like Chase Center doesn't make sense in Sacramento. Can you talk a little bit more about authenticity throughout the Warriors organization and what it takes to build an authentic culture?
So it's funny, I'm looking down. We just created new name tags. So authenticity, I'll show it to you for the listeners. This is a shape of a bird's eye view of Chase Center. So the name tags all of our staff will wear is the shape of the roof of Chase Center with people's name and how long they've been a team member. But, you know, the authenticity of it is we wanted to teach. First of all, all these employees work for the Warriors. Like, you know, I'm not a part-time person that's serving hot dogs. No, I'm a big part of the success of the overall organization. So that's been the key for us is we're all in this together. We brought in Disney, who I think, you know, those theme parks are known for pretty decent service. So we had them come in and help craft a service plan for us. And help to do training with our staff. But it's really the culture of from ownership, president on down, saying like, look, I don't care what if you're the president of the team, or if you're the person, you know, who's cleaning, you know, trash from the plaza, or scanning tickets, or whatever the job may be, is important. And just every single one of our employees knowing that they're a crucial part of the overall experience, has been really important for us.
So one of the things that you kind of touched on a little bit is how you're really making the fan experience inside the Chase Center unique. Recently, the NBA has signed huge television deal, and more than ever in the last 5-10 years, fans have the opportunity to watch a lot of out-of-market games from NBA TV to even their local station. And so that's really probably disrupting a little bit how you think about ticket sales. And when you have this new stadium and you can make a lot of bold new ideas, kind of can you walk us through some of the steps that you've made to really enhance the fan experience inside the stadium and to draw them to come to the games?
Yeah, it's a good point, Nakin. I mean, that's one of the things talked about in sports a lot. You mentioned the out-of-market games, but it's also just 70-inch, you know, flat screen TVs, right? Like, I can sit on my couch and have a great view HD, right? Great view of the game or whatever the next, you know, 4K, all the different things. So I can sit on my couch for free and watch the game, and cold beers in the fridge. And, you know, you get the whole story. You're absolutely right. So I think creating the experience that we're talking about is one part of it, right? Is building an arena on the waterfront in San Francisco, unbelievable location, very centrally located, easy to get to. I didn't talk about transportation and parking, but when you're in San Francisco, that's always a big, just like LA, it's a bigger problem, traffic, but it's an issue in San Francisco too. And so that's been one of the things we've been I would even say pleasantly surprised. We knew we had a good plan and had worked hard to make sure that experience was good. Because again, if it's a pain in the butt to get here, yeah, people are going to stay at home and watch on TV. And the early returns for concerts, it's been better than we actually could have thought. So we're really happy with that. But you come to this thing and come to this arena, you have stuff to do before the event, you have great food. And it's that communal experience, right? I mean, people, when you're watching at home, you maybe with a couple of friends, but to be able to watch it with 20,000 people, and, you know, Steph Curry goes up for a three and the whole thing's waiting, and then the thing goes in and everyone goes nuts. Like, there's something to that. So how do we create that atmosphere? Because some people have talked about Oracle, you know, Roracle Arena was so well known for the atmosphere, and people have concerns as you move to, you know, sometimes teams move to a new building and you sort of lose that magic. We've spent a lot of time and energy thinking about that. Joe Lacob talks about this quite a bit. It was funny. I Steve Ballmer came through Chase Center. This was during the process. He owns the Clippers. And he has that same philosophy. So one thing about Golden One, I'll give you an example. A lot of the club spaces and concourses have views out into the bowl. So it's kind of like a baseball field where I'm walking around getting food and I can actually see the action or at least the scoreboard and get a sense, you know, feel for the crowd, which is really cool. Like, you know, when I first say that, you're probably thinking, yeah, that's awesome. And I agree it is, but the problem with that is you're letting sound out, right? So, I mean, just think of it intuitively. So you have to kind of make a decision, right? Do we want it? And when you go to Golden One, you may feel that it's not quite as loud as Arco was back in the heyday, whatever Sleep Train as it became. And it's not a knock. I told you, I love Golden. I think Golden One Center is awesome overall. But that was one thing that was really important to us. The other thing is just the size of the bowl itself. So we have one of the lowest roofs in the league. And most of the modern buildings have actually higher roofs. And it has to do with concert rigging and all these different things. I don't want to get too technical here. And I said I don't want to get too technical. It's partially because I can't. I leave that to people a lot smarter than me. But we have a low roof, smaller bowl. So that's sort of some of the physical natures of trying to keep that loud atmosphere that fans really want, and that gives the team the home court advantage. And then, you know, what we like to say, and what Rick Welts has been quoted as saying a lot, Rick's our president, is we don't think it's the four walls, you know, that create the atmosphere. We think it's the people in it. And, you know, we're really proud that about 70% of our season ticket holders from last year made the move with us to Chase Center, which a lot of times the new buildings are more in the 55 or 60% range. So we had a good chunk of our fans come with us, which is awesome. And then the last thing I'll touch on is kind of the non-basketball entertainment. So we have a group, an event experience group or game experience group, and their sole job, I shouldn't say sole job because it's a huge job, but anything that you experience that's not the basketball team, that's what they're doing. And we an owner, Peter Guber, who lives down in LA, who's grown up through the movie business. That's all he cares about is the entertainment. That's what, and that, by the way, that's what's great about our ownership group. Joe Lacob's the basketball guy, the business guy, the venture capitalist, and Peter's entertainment, like what is the experience for fans? It's so fun for me when I listen, when I sit in these meetings with these guys, you know, Peter's talking about his stuff and Joe's like half paying attention. That's, I'm exaggerating. But then Joe starts talking about the basketball and Peter's regrouping on the entertainment. They're like the perfect yin and yang. It is unbelievable. Like, by the way, if you're a sports fan, you cannot get better owners than what we have. And I'm biased, of course, because I know these guys. They've been great to me. But they are the most unbelievable owners. Will invest whatever it takes in the team and the experience. But that Peter Gruber's driving that. And Joe's into it too, by the way. Joe's the guy who's like, yes, we want to be innovative, but tradition. We were looking at the color of the court, and we were talking about going to blue. I shouldn't even say this publicly, but we're talking about going to blue paint on the court. And Joe was like, no, it's gold. We've always had the gold key, you know, around the end lines and the baseline. So we went back to the gold. That was Joe. But Peter's pushing our game presentation group. So we actually just presented some of the changes to our leadership team yesterday, going through all the different things we're doing. So we have this new palette with Chase Center. What do we do so that, because like there's some of us that are basketball purists that I don't really care about all the other stuff. I just want to watch the basketball game. And that's fine. You can just tune out all this other stuff. But there's a lot of people, families, and just people that maybe like basketball, but they want to be entertained, that this other stuff really matters. And so, yes, we can just have people running around crazy, tossing T-shirts into the crowd. That's fine. You know, we can do the same stuff we've always done. But our culture is to be innovative. Peter talks about digital fitness. So it's like physical fitness, but we're talking about from a digital standpoint. So the emphasis that we put on that game presentation aspect to put on a show from the time you walk in to the time you leave is a big part of it, in addition to the investment we've made in the physical space.
I was going
to
say with the basketball court, the blue would have been nice as long as it's not like the Oregon basketball court. Whenever I have to watch UCLA play at Oregon, those trees just like they mess with my vision. Like if it's one solid color, I think it's fine. If it's just too much like random trees and objects, it's just confusing.
So Joe Lacob brought that exact thing up in our conversation. So he went to both Stanford and UCLA, by the way, okay. different postgraduate degrees, and goes, has floor seats for Stanford. Okay. So he follows Pac-12 quite a bit, obviously UCLA as well. And we talked about the Oregon, too busy.
Yeah.
Oregon's like football uniforms, cool. The whole Nike thing. There's a lot of cool things there. But we did toy with having slightly different wood patterns inside the three-point line and outside, given the way the game's going and our, you know, our three-point shooters. And he was like, no. He's a purist as far as that goes. So it's funny. Peter's into the experience. But, you know, and that's what's great about these guys is you know, different details are important to different people. But it's funny you brought up the Oregon example because that was one thing that we talked about when we had that discussion about our floor.
So coming back to Peter Guber, who's the other co-owner of the Warriors with Joe Lacob, as well as a UCLA Anderson professor, he recently purchased a stake in the LAFC, and you were involved in the deal as well, Brandon. Can you walk us through that deal?
Yeah, Peter, you probably could already tell how I feel about Peter. Unbelievable guy. So he called me, and this was years ago now. This is probably like 2013 or 14. I was in wine country with my wife for my birthday. And at that point I knew Peter, I'd gotten to know Joe a lot better. I knew Peter a little bit, but he was more interested in talking to the marketing folks, again, game presentation. And at that time I was focused on ticket sales and our retail business. So I knew him, but not that well. And he called me on a random Saturday, but I forget what I was doing. I had my phone on me, which is rare. Left me a message, called him back. And he started talking to me about this investment he was thinking about making. And I can't remember the first call if he told me what it was, but he did over time. He's like, you can't tell anyone, but this is what we're talking about. And he was asking for my advice on some of the ticket sales stuff involved with the potential investment. And we had conversation after conversation. And after a while, he was like, by the way, you can get in on the deal with me if you want. And I kind of was like, yeah. First of all, I have no money. Second of all, we'll see. But over time, he brought it up. And then when it came time to it, I got a call from one of the people on the team. And they're like, okay, here's the deal. This is what it is. This is the process. Do you want to do it? And I was like, are you kidding me? So he gave, it was me, Joe Lacob's son, Kirk, and Rick Welts, the three of us, are all partners, and we own, at least I won't speak for those guys, own a very, very, very small percentage of the team. But it was such an amazing opportunity for him to allow us to do it. And he's smart in retrospect, because I'm now a free consultant. Actually, I paid money to now be a free consultant for the team. You know, he wasn't looking, he didn't need my money or Kirk's money or Rick's money, but he talks about intellectual capital. So we've got this ownership group, first of all, with people like Magic Johnson, Nomar Garciaparra, Mia Hamm, you know, one of the best women soccer players of all time, Will Ferrell, Tony Robbins. You've got these people that helped build the brand, because you're in LA, right? Cluttered sports market, you got to get people's attention. And then people like me, Rick, I won't even put myself in this class, by the way. Tucker Kane, who's now the president of the Dodgers. Lon Rosen's the CMO of the Dodgers. Mike Mahan from Dick Clark Productions. So these people that are operators that have, you know, Mike, in Mike's case, more entertainment. And the Dodgers guys and Rick, Kirk, and I operating a basketball team, just to be able to work and share experiences with the LAFC team. So it's been, you know, I grew up playing soccer, but I wasn't a huge MLS fan. I was with Tom Penn, who's the president, and Peter, and John Thorington, who's the GM, on Sunday. Peter flew everyone up for the Elton John concert, and I spent a couple hours giving these guys a tour, and we had dinner. And, you know, it's been an unbelievable experience. LAFC is, by the way, best team in MLS right now. But I was telling them, I watch more LAFC games than I watch Giants or 49ers games, which is crazy. I mean, growing up a diehard fan of those teams. But it's, look, Peter's been an unbelievable mentor for me and many others. And so I'm just grateful to have that, you know, have the opportunity to have that relationship with a guy like him. So it's been fun.
So it sounded like Peter valued a lot of the knowledge you had on the Warriors side with revenue. And he said, what better way to get Brandon than to get him to invest rather than paying him a consultant?
Yeah, he's that's well said. He's yes, I mean, smart. And look, and I'm super grateful. I mean, to be a part of what those guys are doing and go down there and go to games. You know, Easter Sunday, don't tell my wife that I don't think I said this to her, but I was in LA for Easter Sunday because the Warriors played the Clippers. That was game 4. Okay. 12:30 game. So went to that game. Actually got to sit on the floor with Joe Lacob that night, which is a rare treat. And after the game, a bunch of us went over to the LAFC Seattle Sounders game at Bank of California Stadium, which is, I think it was like a 20-minute drive, and it was a 3 o'clock game. Like, couldn't have been any more perfect. But I was telling people, that's the best Easter I've ever had. That's the part you're not supposed to tell my wife.
Okay. We'll figure that out. Somehow the podcast won't appear on her phone or...
It's okay. She listens to me talk plenty. She's not going to want to listen to this.
One thing I kind of wanted to know is what is it like? So LAFC, this is their second season, I have arrived. So what's it like to start an expansion team, be a part of that? And right now you guys are top of the table and you have one of the league's most exciting players, Carlos Vela, who I think right now is leading with the most goals and is a surefire MVP candidate. So what does it mean to you know, start your own team, to be a small minority owner, but still be a part of it and to see such success so early on?
Yeah, so I see you've done your homework, Nakan. Either that or you're a big MLS fan. Vela, by all accounts, is going to win the MVP. So he's actually, like, 5 games ago set the league record for most combined goals and assists in a season. And I think he's up to 20 – I forget, it's either 28. Yeah, it was either 28 or 29. The league record is for goals is 31. Joseph Martinez last year. And Vela's missed. He had a hamstring issue. So he came out early in the Galaxy game and he missed 2 or 3 games. And then his first game back, he scored a goal. And we pulled him in the 64th minute just because trying to kind of ease him back in. And we've already clinched best record in the West. We have 4 games left in the regular season. But launching the expansion team, it's been an unbelievable experience. And the way I look at this thing, like, I've had so many opportunities to learn over the years. I've learned so much through that process and through the process of building Bank of California Stadium. Learned a lot, actually, that we were able to apply to the work we've done to build Chase Center. But going through that process of building a brand and building a team from scratch. And, you know, you've got the Galaxy sort of in LA and Carson, you know, that has been a successful franchise. So you're competing with those guys. And, you know, it's just learning from all the different people that we have and being able to contribute to that experience, you know, take some of the things we've learned here and think about how that would apply, because there's a lot of similarities, but there's differences too. So thinking about how everything we've learned would apply to that business, you know, has been great. You know, it's interesting when we talk about, I'm changing the subject a little bit, but on along the same lines, when we talk about Chase Center, I've heard Rick say this, so I'll steal it from him. You know, having the opportunity, a lot of people work in sports for many, many, many years and never have the chance to build a new arena or stadium. And in a certain way, we're done twice. The LAFC staff's doing the heavy lifting, but being involved in that and now Chase Center, but having the chance to take everything I and we have learned for me in the last 17 years and apply that to this new building has been so fun. And Pranav, you earlier were talking about, you know, the September 6th opening and all these events. It's so fun to walk around both Chase Center and Bank of California and think about all the discussions you had and all the time you spent scrutinizing, you know, the box office and how this works and how, you know, this escalator stops here and this club is this big because there's this many people and you have access to this and this suite design and all these. I mean, I'm giving you three, you know, random things, but there's a million different decisions, and watching those in action, it's so fulfilling. And because ultimately you're just trying to figure out what's going to create the best experience for the fans. That's really what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about soccer. We've talked about basketball. I think these are sports in the public perception that are sports. There's athletes. Kind of up and coming now is esports. A lot of people are now recognizing, hey, this is a sport. UCLA just made esports an official club sport last year. So students can get scholarships if they're on the esports team. You were the owner of Team Liquid for 2 years. What are your thoughts about esports? Is this something that we're going to see at Chase Center in addition to the basketball games and concerts?
So the short answer is yes. So the Team Liquid thing's interesting. That was another Peter Guber brought that opportunity to Rick Kirk and I. And when Peter Guber comes with an opportunity, you don't say no to that if you're smart. He's been pretty successful. So that was fun to be part of Team Liquid for a couple years. We had to sell our stake because the Warriors have gotten into esports. So we couldn't own one team in. So League of Legends is the biggest esport in the world. And Team Liquid plays in, I think, 10 or 11 sports at this point. But League of Legends is the biggest one. There's 10 teams in the league. We couldn't own Team Liquid and then be part of managing the Golden Guardians, which is the Warriors entry. So that's why we had to sell our stake. But we see esports as a huge growth opportunity. We invested quite a bit. So esports has grown, I mean, the last couple of years so much. And there's a franchising model within League of Legends. So you used to have teams and there was a relegation model like European soccer, but it was hard for teams to invest and sponsors to invest, not knowing if you were going to be in that top level. So we invested $13 million in franchise fees to get our slot in the League of Legends in that league. God, sorry, I'm confusing the situation. The game's called League of Legends, and then there's a league that you're a part of. So a huge investment up front, not to mention, you know, multiple millions of dollars paying players and operating costs year to year. So we believe in it quite a bit. This is something that I mentioned. Kirk Lakob, Joe's son, is heavily involved in. Peter is a huge proponent of esports. So yes, you will see esports at Chase Center. So a couple of things. In Thrive City, which we talked about a little bit, we're building a sports bar with Michael Mina, 18,000 square feet. It's kind of a cross between a sports bar and a food hall. It's not going to be a food hall because you'll be able to sit down at a table and order food from like these eight different concepts. So that's the food hall part, is you have a bunch of different concepts, but it'll be a little higher end. But we'll have cool spaces within there where we could host like a couple hundred person esports event, because that's kind of where it is right now with a lot of the week to week events. And then within Chase Center, we're actually building a smaller theater. No one's ever done this. And this is a Peter Guber brainchild again. What typically happens with arenas is like, if you have an event that doesn't sell out or is not going to sell out, they'll curtain off the upper bowl and just have a lower bowl show. We can do that, obviously, but we don't think that's the best experience. So what we're doing is creating this theater where the ceiling comes down, the walls come in, the main entrance to Chase Center doesn't function. So the secondary entrance is now the main entrance, and you walk in, and our goal is that you walk in and you look around and you kind of go, wait a second, how do they fit this in the arena? Well, the reality is it's using the same seats. It's just a section of the seats. So Chase Center will hold 18,064 people. This theater holds about 5,200, and we could curtain off the upper bowl in that configuration. And then it's like 3,000 seats. So in the short term, we think that's a great opportunity for esports. We also would love we're trying to work with Riot Games to host Worlds at Chase Center, which would be the full building. I think it comes back to North America, if I remember correctly, in 2021. They alternate every 4 years to Korea, China, and other markets. Esports is big in Korea and China in particular. And then the other thing I would say about esports is we've really, your question's right on. I don't know how you got this, but how you got that information, you read our mind. But this plaza is huge because esports, typically you want like a festival type of atmosphere. A lot of times you have all day sort of like different teams playing throughout the day. So to have that outdoor, indoor kind of experience is important. So, I mean, that's just, that's what our site is. So we think for all those reasons that we're really well positioned to be a big part of the continued rise of esports.
So one thing that we like to ask all of our guests are these questions related to UCLA, because it's a UCLA related podcast. So the question is, what is your favorite UCLA memory and who is your favorite Bruin?
Wow. Those are two good, tough questions. I'm going to answer the second one first. But I still don't know the answer. I have a few different thoughts in my head. Who's my favorite UCLA Bruin?
I would avoid someone from the Warriors just because there's so many and you might piss them off if they're not named.
But that's where I was going to go, to be honest with you. I think I'm going to do it anyway. I think I'm going Bob Myers. So I told you, I'm not going to use this as my favorite UCLA moment because I wasn't at UCLA yet, but that 1995 Final Four is one of the best memories of my life.
Yeah.
Being at the Final Four in person for UCLA's championship, Bob Myers was on that team. He didn't play in the championship game, which I tend to remind him about on occasion, especially when he's pissing me off. No, I'm just kidding.
So you give him a hard time, you say we're both in the seats the entire game.
That's exactly right. That's a good one. I haven't said that. I might steal that one. But I think I would say Bob Myers. I mean, he's an unbelievable guy. I've learned so much from him. He just does things the right way. He's unbelievable as a GM, but even better as a guy. He's been like just such a big part. I would say Joe Lacob, Peter Guber, and then it's him and Rick Welts that have been the people that have built this Warriors team. So five straight finals has made all of our lives as an employee and a fan so fun. So how could I pick anyone else over Bob Myers? So I'm gonna go with Bob Myers. And then my favorite UCLA memory. God, that is a tough one. What am I gonna say for my favorite UCLA memory? You can't say graduation because that's when you're leaving, right?
Right, right.
You know what? I'm not gonna answer that one directly. I probably shouldn't admit that. There's too many to remember. Because honestly, like just day in day out, the connections that I made, the friends that I made, and just like to me, like what I figured out later than college, it's not like the classes and the academics. Like all that's important, but you know I'm 40 now. And do I remember like what I learned in my, second year economics class in the second quarter, winter quarter? Probably not. Right. But you're learning how to be an adult, right? You're living on your own, responsibility of going to class, even though you're amidst, and that's what I like about UCLA. There's 400 people in the class, right? So you have to be an adult and like, no one's like micromanaging you and making sure you go to class and do your homework and pass your tests and all these things, right? You gotta be an adult and do it on your own. That's what college is really about. And I can't think of a better place than UCLA, to have gone through and had fun, but also really learned to grow up. So I think I learned so much at UCLA in that time and so many things that have carried through, throughout the rest of my life since I graduated, got crazy to say this, 18 years ago, 2001. So that's my favorite UCLA memory is the whole package, that really taught me and allowed me to kind of get to where I'm sitting today.
Brandon, thank you so much for joining us for Bruin One Year and Out the Other. Before we let you go, feel free to give us a 30-second plug for either of your teams or something else going on in your life.
Oh, you didn't tell me I was going to get this opportunity. You know what I would say? First of all, thanks for the opportunity, Pranav and Nakan. This has been a lot of fun. Love UCLA. Love the opportunity to talk to the UCLA community. Those of you in the Bay Area, my plug is come see Chase Center. I'm super biased. But we think it's going to transform what going to a live event is. And it's just it from A to Z, we've tried to think about everything. And by the way, I'm sure we didn't get it all perfect. We'll continue to iterate, but come see Chase Center, come experience it, be a part of it. And if you're in LA, go to Bank of California Stadium, because by the way, Bank of California is the Chase Center of the MLS. It's an NBA arena amenity wise outside, which didn't exist, until we built Bank of California. So I can cover the SoCal and the NorCal folks, but come out, experience it. Shoot me a note. You can look me up, Brandon Schneider. Happy to help. And looking forward to seeing everybody at Chase Center and Bank of California.
Thanks again, Brandon.